Atheism is inconsistent with the scientific method, a prize-winning physicist says. In conversation with Scientific American, the leading American journal, the Templeton Prize winner does not pull punches on the limits of science, the value of humility, and the irrationality of non-belief. Professor Marcello Gleiser is a theoretical physicist at Dartmouth College. This is an elite academic institution in the US and a prolific science popularizer who won the Templeton Prize. The award from the John Templeton Foundation recognizes an individual, quote, who has made an exceptional contribution to affirming life's spiritual dimension, end quote. Its past recipients include Sir Martin Rees, the Astronomer Royal here in the UK, and Freeman Dyson. Across his 35-year career in science, Professor Gleiser's research has covered the early universe to the behaviour of fundamental particles and the origins of life. But in awarding him its most prestigious honour, the Templeton Foundation chiefly cited his status as a leading public intellectual, revealing, quote, the historical, philosophical, and cultural links between science, the humanities, and spirituality. The journal Scientific American spoke with Professor Gleiser about the need for humility in science, why humans are special, and the fundamental source of his curiosity as a physicist. And the journal asked him, which aspect of your work do you think is most relevant to the Templeton Foundation's spiritual aims? And he says, probably my belief in humility. I believe we should take a much humbler approach to knowledge, in the sense that if you look carefully at the way science works, you'll see that, yes, it is wonderful, magnificent, but it has limits. And this is a really important point he makes, I think. And we have to understand and respect those limits. And by doing that, we understand how science advances. Science becomes really a deeply spiritual conversation with the mysterious about all the things we don't know. So that's one answer to your question, he says. And that has nothing to do with organized religion, obviously, but it does inform my position against atheism. I consider myself an agnostic, he says. Then he's asked, why are you against atheism? It's very interesting. And he says, I honestly think atheism is inconsistent with the scientific method. What I mean by that is, what is atheism? It's a statement, a categorical statement that expresses belief in non-belief. I don't believe, even though I have no evidence for or against. Simply, I don't believe, period. It's a declaration. But in science, we don't really do declarations. We say, okay, you can have a hypothesis. You have to have some evidence for or against that. And so an agnostic would say, look, I have no evidence for God or any kind of God. What God, first of all, the Maori gods or the Jewish, Christian or Muslim God? Which God is that? But on the other hand, an agnostic would acknowledge no right to make a final statement about something he or she doesn't know about. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence and all that. This positions me very much against all of the new atheist guys, even though I want my message to be respectful of people's beliefs and reasoning. And I think, obviously, the Templeton Foundation likes all of this, because this is part of an emerging conversation. It's not just me, it's a bunch of my colleagues, including the astrophysicist Adam Frank, talking more and more about the relation between science and spirituality. Very interesting stuff. And then he comes to some fascinating comments about our place in the universe. Scientific American asks him, so a message of humility, open-mindedness, and tolerance. Other than in discussions of God, where else do you see the most important need for this ethos? And the professor replies, you know, I'm a rare earth kind of guy. I think our situation may be rather special. on a planetary or even galactic scale. So when people talk about Copernicus and Copernicanism, the principle of mediocrity that states we should expect to be average and typical, I say, you know what, it's time to get beyond that. When you look out there at the other planets and the exoplanets that we can make some sense of, when you look at the history of life on Earth, you will realize this place called Earth is absolutely amazing. And maybe, yes, there are others out there, possibly, who knows? We certainly expect so. But right now, what we know is that we have this world, and we are these amazing molecular machines capable of self-awareness, and all that makes us very special indeed. And we know for a fact that there will be no other humans in the universe. There may be some humanoids out there somewhere. We are unique products of our single small planet's long history, he says. The point is this: to understand modern science within this framework is to put humanity back into a kind of moral centre of the universe, in which we have the moral duty to preserve this planet and its life with everything that we've got, because we understand how rare this whole game is, and that for all practical purposes, we are alone. For now, anyways, we have to do this. And then the Scientific American says to him, "Let me play devil's advocate for a moment, only because earlier you referred to the value of humility in science. Some would say now is not the time to be humble, given the rising tide of active, open hostility to science and objectivity around the globe. How would you respond to that?" And he replies, "This is, of course, something people have already told me." "And are you really sure you want to say these things?" they say. And my answer is, yes, absolutely. There is a difference between science and what we can call scientism, which is the notion that science can solve all problems. And this is a really important point, I think he makes. To a large extent, it is not science, but rather how humanity has used science that has put us in our present difficulties. Because most people in general have no awareness of what science can and cannot do. So they misuse it, and they do not think about science in a more pluralistic way. So, okay, you're going to develop a self-driving car. Good. But how will that car handle hard choices like whether to prioritize the lives of its occupants or the lives of pedestrian bystanders? Is it going to be just the technologists from Google who decides? Let us hope not. And I say amen to that. You have to talk to philosophers. You have to talk to ethicists. And I say you need to talk to theologians too. And to not understand that, he says, to say that science has all the answers, to me, is just nonsense. We cannot presume that we are going to solve all the problems of the world by using a strict scientific approach. It will not be the case, and it has never, ever been the case, because the world is too complex, and science has methodological powers as well as methodological limitations. And so what do I say? I say, be honest. I'm going to be honest about the powers of science so that people can actually believe me for my honesty and transparency. If you don't want to be honest and transparent, you're just going to become a liar like everyone else. Which is why I get upset, he says, by misstatements like when you have scientists, Stephen Hawking, a British scientist, and Lawrence Krauss, among them, the American physicist, claiming we have solved the problem of the origin of the universe, or that string theory is correct, and that the final theory of everything is at hand. Such statements are bogus. So I feel as if I am a guardian for the integrity of science right now, someone you can trust because this person is open and honest enough to admit that the scientific enterprise has limitations, which doesn't mean it's weak, he says. And then finally, very interesting paragraph, You mention string theory, says the editor of the journal, and your skepticism about the notion of a final theory of everything. Where does this skepticism come from? That's a very important point, you said. And our professor replies, it is impossible for science to obtain a true theory of everything. And the reason for that is epistemological. Epistemology is to do with knowledge, how we understand the world around us. Basically, he says, the way we acquire information about the world is through measurement. It's through instruments, right? And because of that, our measurements and instruments are always going to tell us a lot of stuff, but they are going to leave stuff out. And we cannot possibly ever think that we could have a theory of everything, because we cannot ever think that we know everything that there is to know about the universe. Now that's the end of the quote. I think it's very interesting because science can't tell us about many really important things. It can't tell us what is truth, what is beauty, how should I be a good person, what is right and wrong, how should I live my life, is there life after death, even is there a creator of the universe. It can't prove that mathematically or through measurements. There are other ways perhaps it could we can understand that truth. So I think his emphasis on humility in science is really important, and it strikes a beautiful note compared to more strident voices who come across as very arrogant and materialist and reductionist in their approach to life, the universe and everything. Anyway, I'll put a link to the article in the description below. Until next time.